Hello, everyone. Hello, Justin. Welcome to Turning Towards Life. We are here for another week, but it's a special week because it's week number 399. So we've done 399 episodes. We're heading for our 400th episode next week on the 8th of June, 2025, if you're listening around now. And we would love you to join us for an episode that we're going to do live next week on the 8th of June between 2 and 4 p.m. UK time. If you'd love to join us, we'd love to have you. And you can sign up to be with us at www.turningtowards.life/400. That's www.turningtowards.life/400. And you can sign up there and hang out with us for that special episode, which is episode 400. And we haven't mentioned this yet, but what we're going to do is a return to the first sources that we ever brought to Turning Towards Life all those 7 and something years ago. So we thought it would be fun to return to the beginning again and see what happens. And we'd love you to be with us for that if you'd like to. We also wanted to say thank you because a few of you have bought us coffees this week, and it's so sweet when people buy us a coffee. Justin, we need to like actually get ourselves a coffee from the coffee money, basically, don't we? Justin's got one already. I need to get myself one. But thank you so much for supporting us, for ever emailing us. We love hearing from you. Every time we've ever heard from somebody from Turning Towards Life, we have an incredible exchange, and we feel more in touch with all of you through each person's message to us. We're so grateful. And also, if you leave us a coffee, there's a way of leaving us a message of like a little space where you can say something to us as well. You can always email us hello@turningtowards.life, and we would love to hear from you. So we're going to get going now with the source that Justin has brought this week. It's a wonderful piece of Justin's writing again, and we are going to do our normal unrehearsed routine. Justin's on the beach in Brighton, everybody. So he, if you're watching, got this funny green flapping thing behind him from a kind of outdoor cafe area on the beach, and I'm in my normal place. And this used to happen more, Justin, didn't it? At the beginning, we would be, I remember one episode where I had a raincoat on, and it was raining, and I was in a harbour in Falmouth or something, in a really stinking back of pub step. So things like that used to happen a bit more. But now it's a little bit more predictable with, I think because I have children, actually, Justin, I've just realised I don't basically go anywhere ever in my life. So it's a bit more predictable for me. And Justin has got older children, so he can roam around the world freely, more freely than I can anyway. So Justin, over to you, and thank you for this source, for writing it, and for bringing it today.
Thank you, Lizzie, and hello, everyone. Yes, this is, Lizzie, when we started, this is going to be pertinent, I think, to the conversation we're going to have. You and I said to one another, this is going to be a practice. We're going to do it no matter what. We're going to find a way, because that's the nature of practice. And so I do remember you sitting on a rainy doorstep in Falmouth in your rain gear, and as you say, we've mostly had stable, quiet environments to do this in. But today, I'm staying with some very, very dear friends here on the South Coast in the UK, and it's Sunday morning and none of them are up. And I decided that it was unreasonable of me to try and record this conversation from there. So I've dashed out, and I'm sitting at a beachside cafe, sheltered as much as I can from the wind. And of course, there are lots of other things going on around, cars and now dogs and the waves. And so who knows, we might get interrupted as we go, but I'll do my best. And it's lovely, lovely to be here. And I think that that's the nature of practice. And so hence this piece that I wrote, I think 9 years ago, which you can find on the Turning Towards Life website, you can find in the show notes, you can find all those kind of places. So this is a piece called On Practice. All the world's great religious traditions know the value of practices, the daily acts of repetition and dedication that can so profoundly shape who we become. In our day-to-day lives, we've mostly forgotten this, leaning towards tools or goals instead. Both have value, but without practice, we miss something very important. The idea of practice is, at its heart, very simple. They are rehearsals of a quality or way of being in the world that we wish to cultivate. Done regularly and with purposeful intent, they gradually shape and reshape our relationship to ourselves and the world. In this way, practices are so very different to techniques or tools, which are intended to bring about some immediate shift or change in the world. And they're different again to goals, ways in which we've got committed to bringing about a particular state of affairs that we wish for. The wonderful possibility in good practices is that we take them up primarily for their own sake, not to change things in a hurry, nor to compare ourselves with standards we might never reach. We take them up because doing them has its own intrinsic value, and because we flower and flourish in unexpected ways by being people who are practicing. The other wonderful possibility in practice is that we can take it a day at a time. Practice now, today. Be scrupulously kind to ourselves when we miss it or forget tomorrow, and begin again the next day. We are all practicing already, whether we know it or not, in the daily routines by which we live our days. And so we can all ask ourselves whether the practices we're in the middle of now have us be in life the way we wish for or value, or whether it's time at last to find a way to practice something new.
Thank you, Justin. The idea of practice is, at its heart, very simple. They are rehearsals of a quality or way of being in the world that we wish to cultivate. Done regularly and with purposeful intent, they gradually shape and reshape our relationship to ourselves and to the world. In this way, practices are so very different to techniques or tools, which are intended to bring about some immediate shift or change in the world. And they're different again to goals, ways in which we've got committed to bringing about a particular state of affairs that we wish for. The wonderful possibility in good practices is that we take them up primarily for their own sake, not to change things in a hurry, nor to compare ourselves with standards we might never reach. We take them up because doing them has its own intrinsic value, and because we flower and flourish in unexpected ways by being people who are practicing. And the other wonderful possibility in practice is that we can take it a day at a time. Practice now, today. Be scrupulously kind to ourselves when we miss it or forget tomorrow, and begin again the next day. We're all practicing already, whether we know it or not, in the daily routines by which we live our days. And so we can all ask ourselves whether the practices we're in the middle of now have us be in life in the way we wish for or value, or whether it's time at last to find a way to practice something new.
So I wanted to talk with you, Lizzie, about this practice we have and that many other people are joining us in, because we know that there are many, many other people who one of their practices is to listen to us and listen to this conversation. And I've been reflecting, it seemed like a good time to do this, 399 weeks into a practice. I've been reflecting on what this practice makes possible. What does it do? And I've been thinking about how one of the things that practice does, which is I find so exciting and so subtle in a way, is that when we take up a practice seriously and consistently, and we practice it because it's our practice, not because it's convenient, but simply because it's there, because it's like a vow or a promise, it does a couple of things that I can see. So one is, I've noticed over these 399 weeks that particularly around this practice, being someone with a vow or a promise to be available at 9 o'clock every Sunday morning to talk to you, cultivates in me a kind of steadiness and solidity and reliability in myself and towards you. So not only am I committed to showing up, I also have to be a person who's able to organize my life around it. And I also have to be a person who's able to make requests of the people that I love to hold the space that this can happen in. And actually, for me, historically, if you took me, probably 25 years ago now, the idea that I would ask anybody else for something, that I would impose upon somebody else to have something happen so that I could meet a commitment, was so frightening for me. I feel like I would lose relationship, and what would they think, and aren't I here to help everybody else, and all of that kind of thing. And so there's a way in which having this practice, quite aside from whatever it is that we've been doing, has over years been building a kind of strength and reliability and stability and solidity and ability to move the world, just because we've got a thing, but it was almost before what's in it. And then I look at the world all the time I have my eyes, ears and heart out for what would be a source to bring into our conversation that would be deepening and life-giving and illuminating, that's not going to be something trite or predictable, you know, too predictable or somehow simplistic. It's really going to ask something of us in the conversation. I'm looking all the time and I realize that there's a part of me that's always looking, because I'll spot something. It might be on a, you know, on a billboard, or I'll hear it on the radio, or somebody will talk to me about something, or I'll catch a passage in a book or on a blog or something. So there's that. And then there's the discipline of making myself available to you and making sure that I'm not, I have had my times, Lizzie, with this conversation where something big that's been pressing in on me on my life, I've either tried to exclude it. I just sort of, and that means I have to get rigid if it's something sad or frightening, whatever. Or I might be gripped by it, so it's very difficult to be in contact with you. And in order to do this practice, I have to find another way every single time. So I have to honor its presence and not get rigid, and because that will be part of the conversation. And I also have to not be completely in the grip of it so I can be available to you. And that practice in making myself available again and again and again to another person and keeping on showing up changes me. There's absolutely no doubt it changes the way I listen. It changes the way I talk. It changes the kind of settled presence I can be. And what I find very joyful about this is none of those things were really what we set out to do. The stated goal was to have a conversation that we wanted to share with other people. Like, that's still true as well. And there are probably 30 or 40 other things I could say. And what it all seems to me as it comes from is the diligent, repeated, it's like having a vow. It's like being in the midst of a mess. And every practice I've ever had, and I have many other ones that are of this scale, that is of this scale, has changed me. And I suppose what it's done is it's woken me up to something in myself and in the world that I ordinarily would not see. And only because I'm willing to be incredibly patient in it and be met by, actually in this case, of course, be met by you. So this is not a solo practice, it's a practice in relationship. So this morning, I'm marveling at what practice can be and how crucial it is, how life-giving it is to be a person who practices intentionally and not just accidentally, which, of course, I have a ton of accidental practices in my life too. I think you might call them habits, some of them life-giving, some of them not.
It's so good to hear you say all of that and to be kind of, as this whole practice is intended, be kind of invited in to wondering in this way as you're speaking, wondering for myself what this is and what intentions I bring and how it changes me. And, you know, I too have the practicality of making requests or demands, in my case, maybe, of please can someone be with the children while I do this thing. And I often say to people, if I'd had children before we did this, I never would have started it. Because I started before they came along, it was already deeply a deep commitment before they came. And so we've had to shape our lives around one child and then having another child and the complexity of trying to wrangle that at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning. And I remember, Justin, when we made the plan to begin, we both looked at our diaries and thought, well, Sunday mornings, nothing really ever happens there. Why don't we just do it then? It's like 9 o'clock's before the world starts. We, even if we had a family thing on a Sunday, there's nothing at 9 o'clock. So, and that's kind of different now, because obviously Sunday morning is a kerfuffly kind of time, like every morning is. And I love it that there is a way that we've managed to do it. And I so appreciate everybody around me, wherever I am, always knows what my commitment is. And it's quite something to feel that kind of support as well, which of course wasn't in the intentionality of the practice. We didn't set out intending to be making requests of people and to use it as a practice for making requests and organizing things and having people understand our commitment. And that's the other thing. I think there's inherent in turning towards life a way that I have to communicate who I really am and what I'm really committed to when I make those requests, because people know it really matters to me to be here. And so they will kind of move heaven and earth to do what they can do to support me in doing that, because they know how important it is to me to do it. And so the intention, I'm just realizing the intentionality of a practice kind of grows as you go. Like you might begin with one intention, and then you realize that way different intentions are being fulfilled as it emerges, as it unfolds as itself a practice. So I'm really appreciating that. And I also really appreciate this line, Justin, in your writing, of their rehearsals of a quality or way of being in the world that we wish to cultivate. And in a way, this is a really very well, beautifully supported rehearsal for how to be someone who listens, how to be someone who I notice I always bring the intention of being changed by you, like really, really letting what you say evoke a response in me that isn't foretold. Because it's live and we don't know what's going to happen. I have to come with the intention of being in response to you rather than knowing what I already think about it and then coming with that. And I really appreciate that intention as well, to be a person who can actually move my accidental practices around listening to the side and bring my intentional ones, so that I'm here as a willing to be changed person and a willing to be responding to you person and really receiving what it is and letting you impact me, letting myself soften into what you're saying so that I can actually be in relationship to what you're saying. It feels very important. And I think what comes to me as well is kind of putting my life down. I think what is born in me is like, how do I put my life down? Maybe this is similar to your thing, Justin, of, you know, when you're in some kind of trauma or frightenedness or pain or something, that we get here and somehow there's a way that's kind of released for a while. It doesn't go away, but that we can be present here and with one another. And to me, that really helps me have perspective on things. It teaches me how to hold things really when I'm in the grips of something. It teaches me being here that I don't have to obsess about whatever problem I've got going on all the time. Because if I can do this with you and that doesn't go away, it makes me question the whole of life. So I come with a spirit of questioning too. Like if I can be here and be in these inquiries whilst behind that door, all kinds of kerfuffles are going on, it teaches me a different relationship to life as we go through this, as we take each week. And because it's always here, it's like a return to a space where I get to be in, I don't want to say right relationship because I don't know what right relationship is, but like some relationship that to life where I'm not completely had by it all the time. And I think that's lots of our practices, Justin, when we work with people, this extraordinary thing comes. And I think it comes from our good hearts and our wish to be of service to other human beings. It's that feeling of, well, of course I would just put everything aside to be of service. And I think that's part of the intentionality too, for me, is to actually be in life in a way that's not just about me and getting what I want or something, but to be in life in a way that's, there's community here. We're held, we can hold others, that we can hold each other. That is such a different life than I think the one I was on a path of for a long time. When I remember the feeling so clearly of, well, if I just have all the things that I want, all the people that I want around me, then that's a complete life. And of course that kind of shattered and fell apart kind of in my early 20s, and I suddenly didn't know who I was, what I was for and whatever, and then had to slowly kind of rebuild a smashed old vase into some cobbled together something that's ended up being really beautiful. But I think this practice is a manifestation of that intent and that deep kind of heartfelt feeling of, what are we all doing here if we're not in service of one another and being for each other? And as you and I are for each other here and for ourselves here, somehow the miraculousness of life has turned into this is a practice for other people in the world to listen. And I think that's why it's such a joy when we hear from people, because to have that intent kind of met with, it's actually useful in a way. Because, you know, you and I, Justin, also met with the intent that if only you and I gather here and we talk, that is enough. We don't need anyone to join us, because this will be enough for you and enough for me. And somehow that kind of enoughness has been a meaningful extension to other people in the world. And I love that. And I love that there's a kind of an original intentionality, and then there's an evolving intentionality because of what we do every week.
So much in what you say, Lizzie. First of all, I noticed how moved I felt when you talked about, when you started talking about your intention of being here in a particular way and listening in a particular way. And I noticed how much it impacted me to hear you say the way that your intention is to extend a kind of listening and welcome my way. What a gift that is to know you as somebody being willing to change by what I be changed by what I have to say, and your experience of what I have to say. And of course, hearing you, I've known that to be the case, but as you say it again, it re-evokes in me the same commitment in me your way is to be here, to be open and changeable from this conversation. And that this whole theme of intention and practice that you're bringing in is so important to notice that when we're doing a practice with sincerity, it's never just about doing the motions of the thing. It always, at its best, practice is invested with an intent that we bring ourselves, like a sort of almost like a promise. This is the kind of promise I was talking about, the promise that we will bring ourselves to life in a particular way. And by doing so, we find ourselves entering into that way and changing ourselves and one another in the process. And it struck me to say that there's a way in which you were talking about it. I think another way of saying it, I want to hold the part you said about service and for one another and all of that, because I think that's central for me, is practice that brings us into service is the kind of practice that the world could do with a lot of, you know, and there is a lot of it in the world. And for each of us to wonder about the other part of practice that I'm hearing in what you say is that practice can help us get over ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, like all of my ordinary patterning and preferences and everything that sometimes is helpful and often gets in the way. Practicing well as a chance to set that aside and see what happens. And the one I was thinking about aside from this is I've been dancing for a few months. I've been going to a Thursday evening dancing, communal dancing practice. And one of the things that the two things I've really noticed about it, I mean, it's been amazing. First of all, I noticed the joyful, I've been going with the intention of moving in ways that I don't ordinarily move. So finding out where are the constraints in how I move and then moving in new ways, finding new ways to move. And one of the things I'm finding from it is I really am developing new ways to move in the world. Like I'm familiar with my body doing things that ordinarily I'm unfamiliar with. And I've got way more range and reach. So that's very joyful. But the thing that I bump, that hasn't been hard for me. It might have been hard for me in my 20s and maybe 30s. I feel like, oh, I don't want anyone to see me move or anything like that. But actually the thing that it's really brought me into contact with is the way I can put myself on the edge of groups. Mm. So it's a 2-hour practice. And I notice that about an hour in, I'm already trying to leave. I can feel my body go like, when's it time? And I'm having a wonderful time. I think I'd better get out before it gets a bit too vulnerable. And they do this thing at the end where everybody stops and says hello to one another. It's like, maybe I'll just sneak out before that happened. And it's been, I've been aware of that pattern of putting myself on the edge of certain things for a while. But here, I've gone with one intention and it's brought me smack up against this other one, which is my body wants to get me out of here, or something in me wants to get me out of here. Can I be kind enough to that I can stay? And it's actually really hard, because there comes a point where it's like an itch. And it's like, oh, I'll just feel fine if I go out the door. And sometimes I go out the door, you know, and I sneak out. And I feel like relieved and also disappointed at the same time, because I realized that there's something here. And I think it was in a lot of the things that you said, there's something about simultaneously allowing it to be messy and all of that kind of stuff, but also having some standards. Like, practicing well isn't just random. I actually noticed that it brings me, just like you were saying, I think this has brought you into some, you've had to articulate to your family what's important to you so that they can support you. In that other practice, I'm noticing that I'm coming up against something that I realize is important to me that I cannot escape if I do the practice. And and if I just ignore it, I'm not really living into the possibility that the practice offers. And in that way, the practice calls me to something, like engaging it calls me beyond myself. I can't just be my ordinary self with the intention that I've gone in. If I went in without intention, I could probably just sneak out and go, it wasn't that great tonight and I just wanted to leave. But if I'm really sincere about my intention, I'm going to have to meet myself. And then I'm going to have to wonder about what of that do I want to breathe myself bigger than in order that I can be here. And the fact that I've decided to go every week keeps on, it's not like I feel like going tonight or not going. In fact, on Thursday night, I really felt like not going, but I went because that's what practice is. That's what we do. So I noticed that that one is changing me too. Yeah. Just like this one is.
I was just thinking, Justin, that there are the kind of the dance classes to go to on a Thursday night for those of us who have that extraordinary, but probably taken for granted, mostly freedom to go to a dance class on a Thursday night. But there's the accidental practices or all the kind of necessary practices that don't need to be what they've always been because we could bring our intentionality to them. Like I'm noticed just really, really noticing the simple thing that happens every single day, which is doing the washing up, clearing up the kitchen, folding up the clothes stuff of my life. And it brings me so clearly, like your dance class, in touch with all of the bits of me that I'm avoiding by not doing it, if that makes sense. So if I don't do the washing up, I don't get in touch with my resentment. If I do the washing up, I do. So do I just do the washing up resentfully, or do I choose to have it as some kind of intentionality infused way in the world where I get to notice what all of that resentment is and hold it? Like you said, like getting over in a spirit of getting over myself, it's like, can I see what this is? And can I actually use it as a chance to see it and to examine it and to be with it and to wonder what it is at the same time as cultivating something different as well? And I think that for me is the heart of all of this, is that whatever we're doing, like you said, there's all these habits, but we are beings that can infuse things with whatever we intend if we want to. So I can bring some intentionality to the washing up or to folding up all the clothes or to sweeping up for the 150,000th time all the bits and pieces on the floor of my house that are constantly there. And I can either, and to bedtime, my God, and I can bring an intentionality. So for example, last night I was on my own doing bedtime, which is a practice I do every single day and it takes a long time every single day. And I can either get like, I need to be somewhere else, or this is unfair, or please, please, please just go to sleep. I need to do something else than this, all of that. Or I could, like I did last night, and I actually managed it last night. And I'm not saying I manage it every night, but last night I thought, I'm going to surrender. I'm not going to try and get my children to sleep. I'm going to actually just surrender to the fact that they aren't going to sleep. And we went to the playground and to the river and we saw the ducks. And so we actually just embraced the whole thing, because it's now the summer and there's light outside and they didn't want to go to sleep and whatever. And we had a really nice time. I'm not saying it wasn't hairy when it got to sleep time, because it's really hard getting two children to sleep who are very willful, large spirits. But we had a really nice time. And I could feel it. The option was there to feel alone, resentful, tragic, victim. And I thought, but I don't have to feel that way. I don't have to feel that way. What if I bring, this is a thing that happens every day, repeats itself every day. There's more or less resource depending on who's around. Yesterday was not very resourceful. I was on my own. Can I bring to even this kind of intensity of difficulty, a kind of surrender, and see then what world it brings back towards me? And the answer is yes, I can. And so then it's beautifully confronting, because I can bring that intentionality to whatever's happening. And I had a very lovely friend who died recently, and the main kind of theme of her funeral was that there's this little boat that she felt like she was in as she was moving on, and she called it a coracle. I haven't really looked up a coracle, but I think it's a small little vessel. And her message was constantly just to keep your arms in, because if your arms are outside, you're going to bash them on everything and it's going to hurt. So go with the flow and keep your arms in. And I've been holding her really close to me these last days and feeling what a practice of holding my arms in looks like. As in, there's a flow here. I am not in control of what's happening. I don't know what anything is for, really. And if I hold my arms in and flow, what kind of life does that bring about? And yesterday, when I held my arms in instead of letting them scrape along the floor and bashing into all the rocks of bedtime, we had a joyful time, which of course is the intentionality of my life, my whole life. So, you know, when you're talking in your source about the kind of values that we have and what we really intend and who we really want to be and what we wish for, it's not like I have to change my life completely circumstantially to be that person. But when you say practicing something new, for me, it's not about like going out and starting horse riding or something, although it might be. But in my life right now, it's what is already happening and how can I bring different intention to the things I have to do, that I'm committed to doing, so that I actually end up with a life added up to joy or kindness or warmth, rather than one of resentment and control and freaking out because everything's not going my way. And that to me is the beauty of practice, is that it's already here and we can imbue anything we like with the thing that we most long and wish for. And then we can be supported in bringing those intentions to the things that we have to do and we want to do and we do anyway.
So glad you brought all of that in, Lizzie, as a way for us to end, to this reminder that we're always practicing. So it might be 399 weeks of a podcast conversation, or it might be taking up going to a dance class, or it might be the practices of parenting, of mothering and fathering, and the practices of partnering and loving, and the practices of being somebody who takes care of a home. Or a very good friend of mine recently was talking about the practices of admin, which I thought was wonderful, because I often approach like admin tasks as if they were kind of some irritating you know, and I want to avoid them. And he was talking to me about, so who, when you sit and do your taxes or your emails or your bank statements or buying insurance or whatever it is, what kind of person do you want to be? Who do you want to be in the midst of that? And I was struck, just as a parting thought, Lizzie, I was struck by when you were talking about, it's very moving hearing about you and your two gorgeous ones and the kerfuffles about bedtime and who to be in it. That one of the other things about practice is that what it does is if we don't treat it as some kind of, have it as being to impress anybody as a kind of performance, but if we have it as an opportunity to encounter what's real, we're going to very often be confused and lost and feel out of our depth and feel far from what we long for. And then there's a chance to practice kindness. I wrote it in the piece to be really kind. Like, of course, I'm a messy, messed up, wonderful, broken, messy, you know, confusing human. And just because I have an intention doesn't mean it's always going to be born in my heart and through my hands. Mm-hmm. And that's an opportunity to kind of stay awake to ourselves, to actually be here in our lives because we're paying attention. Mm-hmm. So it's moving, very moving for me, conversation, Lizzie. I've really appreciated our going into both the sort of the distinctions about practice and the earthiness and realness of everyday life of practice. And thank you for being a partner in practice with me in this over so long. And thank you to all of you for being with us. And a reminder that turningtowards.life/400, if you're listening to this in early June 2025 and you want to join us on the 8th of June, and turningtowards.life is a place where you can support us and see all of these conversations and join us for Turning Towards Life live in September and sign up for our email. All of those are possible. And we're going to stop here and we will look forward to our 400th episode live with some of you, maybe with many of you, next week on Sunday, June the 8th. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.